You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Darwin Zook. Thanks for tuning in to MLB Extras podcast, Diamondbacks edition. Pleased to be joined by D-backs reporter Steve Gilbert. Thanks for taking the time, as always, Steve. And let's start right here. 82-80. Some teams might be happy finishing over 500, but the D-backs were coming off a playoff season in 2017. So a loaded question to start. If you had to pinpoint one or two things, what prevented Arizona from getting back to the playoffs in consecutive seasons?
Yeah, I think it really was, again, the month of September that did them in, and some bullpen and offensive struggles during that month that really cost them. You mentioned them. They made the playoffs last year, and this year they were in first place at the beginning of every single month outside of finishing that way. So it was very disappointing for them, I think, being about a game and a half up towards the end of August 29th, I think it was. And then finishing as far back as they did, it was quite a September swoon for them. And I think that left a bad taste in their mouth, certainly. And a lot of that was because, you know, the bullpen got a lot of attention in terms of blowing some games in Los Angeles. But I think it's the offense, too, that really shouldered most of the blame, simply because they didn't produce on a consistent basis and left very little margin for error for the relievers to work with. And I think that eventually just kind of caught up with them.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned people focused and honed in on the bullpen, and that was a problem at times. But overall, as a team, they finished, you know, fourth in ERA in baseball this year. I mean, it's pretty good, but 19th in runs scored. So is it really more on the offense not coming through when it mattered most?
Yeah, I think they you know, some of their guys had years like you might expect. You know, Paul Goldschmidt had another Paul Goldschmidt year, and David Peralta had a nice year for them. You know, Nick Ahmed, for the most part, had a nice year, a little bit more offense than you're used to expect from him. But coming through with runners in scoring position, building innings, they led all of baseball, I believe, in runs scored in the first inning, but then just really struggled to tack on runs and kind of keep that going throughout a game. It would seem like the offense just kind of went quiet. And I think you know, that's probably one of the reasons why they mutually parted ways with hitting coach Dave Magadan, and will try to get, you know, a little bit of a different voice in there to see if that can help them for next year.
Would you say, is this too over the top? I say this is a crossroads type time, an off season for Mike Hazen and the D-backs moving forward. They have some decisions they obviously have to make. They don't have to make a decision yet on Paul Goldschmidt and how much they have to pay him. He has another year on the deal, but when you start to look at this offseason and coming off a season in which they hope to, you know, build off that playoff year and it didn't work out, what decisions have to be made now in terms of payroll, in terms of Goldschmidt in the future, where they're kind of heading in the direction with this team?
I think you're exactly right. I think it's a real turning point for the organization. It's a real kind of which direction are they going to go type of thing here in this situation. They're going to lose a couple of key players in all likelihood in outfielder A.J. Pollock and Patrick Corbin, who are both free agents. And certainly Corbin's going to get a big deal on the market, and Pollock could as well. So they have to kind of take a look and decide, can they fill those holes within their budgetary situation? Does it make sense to try and be all in again for next year and try to win while they still have, as you mentioned, you know, an option for next year on Paul Goldschmidt? Do they look to try to rebuild and tear things down and maybe trade Paul Goldschmidt? I mean, I think for the first time ever, they're going to at least listen on all their players, whereas in the past, you know, that listening on Paul Goldschmidt was just kind of a non-starter for them. But I think this year they met with ownership. Mike Hazen met with ownership a little more than a week ago. And basically the consensus that came out of that meeting was, let's kind of see what the market is like. Let's see how the trade market is. Let's get a feel for what the players that they currently have might be worth on the open market. You know, so could they make improvements that way? And also they want to get a feel a little bit for the free agent market. Is it going to be as slow as it was last year, where there might be some bargains there that could help them if they chose to, you know, continue to try to compete for next year? Or is it a situation where they're going to have to take maybe a little bit of a step backward? So I think right now, as you know, I talked to Mike towards the end of last week, and he was still in that situation where he says probably another month before they know exactly what direction they want to go in. And it'll probably be some combination of, you know, going forward next year and rebuilding as opposed to, you know, one extreme or the other.
How much is part of the evaluation with a player like Goldschmidt, who's 31, face of the franchise, like you said, and someone who wasn't considered to be ever on the trade market for a while with the team? How much is an evaluation of what the fans think and a reaction that they might have in a way that would not be too positive if a guy like Goldschmidt is traded? Or does that not really come into consideration with something like this?
Well, I think with a guy like Goldschmidt, it probably does, in the sense that, you know, this is a, when, you know, when you talk about trading a face of the franchise, as you referred to him as, and that's exactly what he is. He's much loved in this community. I think that's where ownership gets involved, and they have to sign off on something like that, as much as they trust Mike Hazen, as much as they, you know, he has autonomy in a lot of ways. When it becomes to big decisions like that, usually ownership for all teams is considered when it comes to those things. So I do think that the Phoenix market here is I don't want to say it's fickle, but I do think that a lot of people here are from other places and kind of bring their allegiances with them. So I think it's important that they have players that they can kind of, you know, call their own. And certainly Goldschmidt's one of them. And I think to a certain extent, they will take that into consideration. I also think, you know, I guess if they feel like it's the best thing going forward in terms of being competitive, then maybe that overrides the fan aspect of it.
We're talking with Steve Gilbert, and we're talking Diamondbacks right now, offseason underway for Arizona. And you mentioned a couple guys earlier, free agents, outfielder A.J. Pollock and pitcher Patrick Corbin. Is Arizona thinking that they're going to definitely lose these guys? And if so, what type of replacement situation would they be looking at within the organization? Or do they then go out on the free agent market themselves and try and find cheaper replacements, if you will? Where does that stand with Corbin and Pollock?
Well, I think Corbin is all but certainly going to be gone, only because he's going to be the best, if not one of the best, if not the best free agent pitcher out there. And he's shown over the last couple of years how good he is, that he's back from that Tommy John surgery of a few years ago. So I think that he's probably going to end up being out of their price range. A.J. Pollock has had some, you know, trouble with injuries in the past. And you know, again, this past season had it, didn't finish the year as strong as he had hoped. So maybe he's a guy that they could get back on a qualifying offer or make an offer to him that would fit within their budget on a multi-year deal. We'll have to see how the market develops for outfielders. Last year, you know, again, with the JD Martinez thing, you saw where guys weren't necessarily getting what they expected. So I think all but certainly Corbin is gone and Pollock probably gone, but I think there's probably more of a chance with him than there would be with say Corbin. In terms of replacing those guys, that's really the tough part for them, is like, how do they, you know, Corbin's almost like an ace-like pitcher, and those aren't easy to find, especially on a mid-market team's budget. So that's where Hazen refers to being creative with his roster. Now, maybe that means they trade a guy like Goldschmidt and get some pitching back, or maybe it means they unload Zach Greinke's contract, which, you know, he's got three more years of more than $30 million salaries left on it. And get some pieces back that way, or maybe they have some other depth. I don't think you'll see them really start to trade some of their top prospects. I think they're kind of committed to, they want to have some things in the pipeline coming up in the future.
Yeah, just to bring that full circle, you kind of did it right there. But if I'm thinking from Mike Hazen's perspective, and you have a guy like Goldschmidt, if you were to move on from, you know, high-priced guys like Greinke and what Goldschmidt will make in a year from now, would that clear room to be able to re-sign guys like Pollock and Corbin? Or do those things not really go hand in hand? Are those separate entities? Or would giving up a guy like Goldschmidt then create that space, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think maybe moving a guy like Greinke would open up some money that you could use on an extension possibly for Goldschmidt. But again, you know, Greinke's owed over $30 million a year in each of the next 3 years. So you're probably going to have to eat part of that, I would imagine, to trade him. So again, then it starts to become, okay, how much money exactly are you saving, and are you making yourselves more competitive that way? And what exactly is the goal? And I think that's kind of why it's going to be so fascinating to watch them this offseason, because there's so many different directions that they could go and so many kind of intertwined parts here. That if they go in this direction, then that leads to that, then that leads to that. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of, you know, how this market shapes up in the next month and what they end up doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. One domino leads to the next for sure, especially in it with a team like Arizona, who just doesn't have an unlimited payroll to be able to just pay anyone they want. When you look at this, some of the younger guys within the organization, I believe you wrote about Widener and Chisholm. Are those guys that could be ready to contribute sooner than later with the big league team, or are those still a year or two away?
I think you got guys like Widener, and you have guys like John Duplantier, who are pitchers who, you know, could contribute as soon as next year. Whether that's a Taylor Clark is another pitcher that they like who could contribute next year. I think some of their other top prospects like Jazz Chisholm are probably a couple of years away. They're in the lower end of the minor leagues. They've been coming through from their last few drafts that they feel really good about. So I think that they do have a few top end prospects in terms of top end. When I say that, at the top levels, but most of their top prospects are a little bit further down on a scale there.
And just to wrap up with you, Steve, people going to Chase Field next year, they might notice some changes on the field. Am I getting that right? Installing new types of grass or having to do with the weather there? You wrote a little thing about that. What's the deal in terms of changes at Chase Field with the field next season?
Yeah, they're going to go with synthetic grass at Chase Field for the first time ever. It's a real challenge for them to grow grass here, and has been ever since the beginning. The original owner, Jerry Colangelo, funded some research by scientists, you know, in a couple of years from when he was awarded the team before they actually started playing. And they tried different types of grass that could grow with less sunlight. And they've had to keep the roof open for long periods of time during the summer, during the day, to try to let the grass get some sun. But that made it harder to cool and less comfortable for fans by game time, because then they would close the roof and pump the air conditioning. But as anybody who lives out here knows, sometimes it takes a long time to cool down, even if you mentioned a 50,000 seat stadium. So they're going to go with the synthetic turf, which should allow them to keep the roof closed and keep the air conditioning in. And they'll use far less electricity, so it'll be more environmentally friendly. And they're going to use about 2 million gallons less of water, which also helps out here in the desert for sure. So it's going to be interesting. First time they've ever done something outside of natural grass here in Phoenix. And this is the first major league team to have this particular strand of synthetic grass. So that's another thing that'll be interesting to see how that plays next year.
Yeah, definitely. And see if it leads to perhaps other teams going in that direction as well. It's certainly an interesting time for the Diamondbacks. A lot of decisions moving forward. Steve, we appreciate the time. Great stuff as always, my friend. And we'll be talking to you again very soon.
Darn, my pleasure. Look forward to it.
Absolutely. D-backs reporter Steve Gilbert joining us here on MLB Extras.